Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today from the American Pastors Network. We proclaim truth in the public square by connecting a biblical worldview and constitutional principles to the most significant news of the day. Simple, careful, and truthful. That's Stand in the Gap Today. Now, here's your host.
Well, hello, friends. This is Jamie Mitchell, Director of Church Culture here at the American Pastors Network. I'll be your host today for Stand in the Gap. Back in 1992, amidst the Promise Keeper movement, October was designated as a month to celebrate and love on pastors and missionaries and others who serve in ministry. And just like we have special days to acknowledge grandparents, secretaries, moms, and dads, during the month of October, believers are encouraged to encourage their shepherds. And today we want to help you do that. And as part of that, today's program is entitled Care for Clergy, Both Practical and Personal. And we're going to have a number of guests on today. In the first half of our program, I'm so glad to welcome to Stand in the Gap today, Jerry Whitley. Jerry was a pastor, and he understands the challenges and struggles of ministries that pastors and their families meet. And one of them is the challenge of finances, and specifically planning for retirement. Some 10 years ago, probably more than that, Jerry left full-time ministry to devote himself to helping pastors find financial freedom. And Jerry, I'm going to stop there. I don't want to do justice to your story. I want you to share a little bit of your story, but welcome to Stand in the Gap. I am so glad that we met. What a joy it is now to have you on Stand in the Gap.
Thank you, Jamie, very much. It's my privilege to join you today.
Well, Jerry, we're helping the people listening today so they can help their pastor. There may be board members, deacons, elders, trustees, or just lay people in the church who may be able to come around their pastor and help about the financial issue. I want you to just share briefly with the audience your story. How did a person trained to preach and shepherd end up leading a very successful financial planning business? Why did you make that move? What was the motivating factors?
Well, I appreciate that. So I began ministry when I was a child. That's really all I dreamed about. Everyone else was throwing a football or catching a baseball, and my uncle built a little pulpit I had in the carport, and I would set my two little brothers there and make them listen to me preach, because I needed the practice and they needed the preaching. So that was always my dream, and started out, went to school not to be a minister, but ended up in ministry my senior year, and started as a youth pastor, was a senior pastor for almost 28 years. In 2005, literally on February 19th of 2005, my spouse, my partner, we'd built two wonderful churches together, was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then 5 years to the day, she was diagnosed, like 5 years and 10 minutes, she passed away, literally sitting in my lap in our living room with my two sons, holding her hand. So that was one of those moments in my life that, unfortunately, many of us have had to experience, but it began a journey of what we're talking about today. Although we pastored larger churches, we built those churches, but I'd chosen to be somewhat bivocational throughout my ministry career, and often wondered why. But after she was gone, I realized that my financial services career may be more impactful than my pastoral career, because I felt like I could influence ministers financially. I thought I knew the rules after 28 years of pastoring and being involved in financial services, and I began to realize over the next couple of years of putting this together that not only did I not understand the rules, that I didn't know anyone that did, denominationally, pastorally, even CPAs and tax attorneys. I just found there's just this giant gap in understanding, and so I just gave myself to it. There's a lot more background information there. Remarried, Sharon and I, started this journey together, and God's really blessed it. About 60 advisors scattered around the country, different offices from Portland, Oregon to Miami, Florida, and so God's really been good to us.
Well, Jerry, that is such a unique position to be in, having been the minister and faced a lot of these financial issues, and having been in ministry myself, I know that it's interesting that pastors and equally so churches and church leaders, they don't like to discuss pastor's salary, retirement, money needs, and those kind of things. Why do you think that's a topic that we seem to avoid in the church?
Well, I think number one is just a lack of understanding. Everybody treats a minister differently. If I walked into the last town I pastored in, and I haven't pastored in many years now, I could go to Walmart in that town, and it wouldn't be but a few minutes till someone walked up to me and called me pastor. That was my identity. It was my name. And because you're a minister, you're treated differently. Your family treats you differently. Your friends treat you differently. Your parishioners, your members of your church treat you. The general public treats you differently. Even God treats you differently. If renting your garments was a common practice of mourning. Even David himself did it when he lost his first child with Bathsheba. But when Aaron, and I call him kind of the first preacher in the Bible, when he lost his sons, the Lord spoke to him and said, do not rend your garments. You can't do what other people do. And if you take that even another step deeper, the IRS treats ministers different. And you may have a CPA and an attorney on your church board, and they don't understand ministerial finances. And so I think number one is a lack of understanding. I think also number two, perhaps there's a taboo around maybe the last two generations especially, sort of a taboo around pastoral or ministerial income. There's an old notion that a pastor needs to take a vow of poverty, and I just don't agree with that. And so it's just wrong in my opinion. So we have a couple of generations that are struggling in retirement. We have pastors that have stayed on many years after their most effective years of ministry are gone because they couldn't afford to leave, to retire. Or the reverse, we have ministers that retired and literally have nothing. They lived in a parsonage. They opted out of Social Security. They don't have Medicare. They didn't save any money for retirement. And it's an epidemic. And that's not a word I use lightly, but it's an epidemic in ministerial circles today all across the nation. And I feel called and sort of uniquely equipped by God to address this. And so, yeah, I think, again, I just think it's lack of understanding, and it's taboo, and it's just very seldom discussed and very poorly understood.
Amen. Hey, friends, the statistics are frightening. Not only are most Americans not ready for the future regarding their money, woefully too many of pastors, the person who preached to you this past Sunday, has probably put off putting his house in order. When we return, Jerry's going to share some remedies for financial dilemmas that pastors face and help them put their house in order. Come back and join us for the second segment of Stand in the Gap Today.
For years, faithful Christians formed nonprofit foundations or trusts to preserve their ability to generously give to their favorite causes or ministries, even after their death. The problem? Professional managers, pressure from left-wing agendas, and even family members with opposing views hijacked the original donor intent. This is sad, but true. But this subversion of purpose can be prevented. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network, and I'm glad to recommend Capstone Legacy Foundation in Wayne, Pennsylvania, an experienced and capable Christian community foundation established to help you set up a ministry, a giving structure guaranteed not to be hijacked, or a place you can donate cash or non-cash assets like stocks, bonds, or property. Capstone's designed to help you achieve immediate tax savings and give you needed time to decide how to prayerfully allocate your giving. Contact Capstone at 610-688-8890 or visit them at capstonelegacy.org.
I'm Todd Morris for Ruth Kramer with Mission Network News. If Israel continues its offensive on Hamas in Gaza, Iran's foreign minister threatens an expansion of war fronts. The U.S. State Department has confirmed that Hamas terrorists receive significant funding from Iran. Meanwhile, Iran's own economy falters and Iranian citizens suffer the collateral damage. Mike Ansari with Heart for Iran says Iranians often call the ministry with struggles of hopelessness. Heart for Iran offers trauma counseling and biblical support. Pray for Iranians to know Christ's hope. Along with war, the Middle East is full of persecution, yet Brian Dennett with AMG International says the Lord is calling people out of Islam at rapid rates. These new believers from a Muslim background are ready to share their faith, but they don't know how to make disciples. Help AMG International provide training and resources through a new program and learn more at missionnews.org, a service of One Way Ministries. I'm Dot Morris.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
Well, we're discussing caring for the clergy as part of Pastor Appreciation Month, trying to be practical and personal. And our first guest today is Jerry Whitley, the president of Guardian Financial Group. He's been helping churches to get their ministers financially healthy and ready for retirement. Jerry, we've been talking about why it matters. The matters of pastors' finances are like the third rail of a train track. You dare not touch it. But you meet with a lot of boards. Matter of fact, you sit down with boards and you try to encourage them and teach them and train them. What are some specific things that you speak to boards about that they really need to focus in on to help their shepherds?
Well, that's a multifaceted question. I'd start out by saying that many times a pastor refuses, especially in a growing church or a small church. Over the years, I've met with hundreds of pastors that have refused raises from their board or from the church. And my challenge to the pastor is, you know, your primary responsibility if you're married is to your wife and your family, and secondarily to the church. And so I've seen pastors sacrifice their family at the altar of the church, and I don't know any stronger way to say that. And I think that's just exactly backwards of the way it needs to be. So a lot of times it's the pastor's fault. Sometimes it's the fault of, not the fault of the board, but just a lack of knowledge and understanding. Timothy said that a worker is worthy of his hire, and that we should not muzzle the ox that treads the grain. And so where does that begin? It begins by education. Again, I think I said earlier that you'd have a tax attorney and a CPA on the church board, and most likely they're not going to understand ministerial income, how ministers should get paid, what is housing allowance, which is, if I could use the King James, it's kind of the wheel in the middle of the wheel that everything a minister's income should revolve around. What is a 403b9? And it's a deferred compensation plan for churches. In the independent space, we see a lot of churches that actually have the wrong compensation plan, so our deferred compensation plan. So we also see about a third of the ministers that became conscientious objectors to Social Security and Medicare, and don't even really understand. There are still, unfortunately, in America today, there are still Bible colleges and seminaries that are teaching ministers to opt out of Social Security. And I can't tell you the ministers I've spoke to that did that, and I've never spoken to one that didn't regret it. And most of them also did not understand that they also opted out of Medicare. And that's one of those things. We can help resolve that. There's some ways to at least get them Medicare qualified, and we can help them with that. Should a minister pay off his home? How much of a minister's salary should be in housing? How much should be in deferrals for retirement? You know, how do we avoid disinheriting our spouse? Because if a minister has a housing allowance in retirement, which most ministers don't even realize they can receive housing allowance in retirement, but it's the will and the, it's even more important in retirement than it is while you're working. But if you are receiving housing allowance and you predecease your spouse, which we did a study in West Texas a couple of years ago, 94% of the ministers that had passed away in the last several decades had predeceased their spouse. So if a man and a wife are the same age and the man's a senior pastor, it's a 75% chance in the general population. But we found it even more so in ministry, that if you predecease her, then she cannot use your housing allowance in retirement. So how do we build that? And just a little bit of education with the board, with the pastor, with the staff goes a long ways. What if a minister lives in a parsonage? What if a minister lives in a parsonage, he opted out of Social Security, he has no money saved or isn't saving anything currently for retirement? It's an epidemic. But if a minister, even today, if there's a 60-year-old minister and he is planned poorly, there are specific opportunities within the IRS code that are different from any other profession. The IRS is very liberal and general when it refers to ministry. It's IRS code 107, and there's some rules that allow ministers to do things to plan for retirement that aren't available to the general public to help him catch up. If you look at the life of a minister, I liken it to a three-legged stool. If life is physical and it's spiritual, and then that third leg is financial. I mean, you go to the gym every day, and you're praying and you're devout, but your finances are a mess. I don't know how you succeed in ministry. And I think it's the most neglected, again, the most taboo subject in ministry today. And I'll do a breakout session. You were in one of those sessions, Jamie. So I'll do a breakout session at a church conference somewhere, and my session will be attended much more than the others because no one's ever heard the information. And to a man, to a woman, the people that sit in those meetings are like, if I would have heard this 30 years ago, how different my life would be today. And we're perishing for lack of knowledge. And so we need to educate the church boards. We need to educate the ministers. We need to educate their accountants, their attorneys, and no one understands the rules. And so our job is, we're running around the nation, all of us, with our hair on fire, trying to get as much of this information into as many hands as possible to help so this next generation doesn't have to suffer the same mistakes of the last couple.
You know, Jerry, one of the things that I've heard you say a numbers of times, and having heard you speak was just a tremendous thing. But one of the things about being a pastor is you're almost like you are an owner of a small business, where you're trying to get something built, you're trying to get something grown, you're in charge of everything. And if you were an owner of a small business, then you would dictate what your salary is and what you would do for your finances. But you don't have that as a pastor. You have all of the responsibility, but when it comes to this piece, you don't. And you've said to me that one of the things that's really necessary is to have an advocate. What do you mean by that?
Well, in the South, we call that a bell cow. So, but having someone on the board, or however your church government is structured, but having someone in a position of decision making that can influence the other decision makers on your behalf, because it's very awkward. Like you said, you're in charge of everything, but when it comes to your personal finances, you're not. Whereas in any other CEO type position, you would be. But to have an advocate, someone that believes in what you've done, you've buried their dad, you've baptized their family, you've married their children, you've done all these things, and so there are folks in your congregation and in leadership in your church that would love to do the right thing if they only knew what the right thing was. And so having that advocate, I think, is very important. I have a meeting tomorrow night with an advocate in a very large church in Houston, and to do that, to educate him as to what to go to the rest of the leaders in that church and say, this is what we need to be doing for our pastor. So, yes, sir, that's a huge issue. And if you have just somebody that understands the rules besides the pastor, then that really helps.
Jerry, in our last minute or so, what must a pastor make sure he's doing to be ready for a future financially? And on your website, you have something called the Guardian Promise. What does that mean? And what should the pastor do? The one thing he should do?
Well, so no plan is a plan. It's just a terrible one. And so you need a plan. Every minister needs a plan. And, you know, if you opted out of Social Security and Medicare, how do you solve that? Make sure you have the proper deferred compensation plan. Get a plan. Don't be afraid to discuss where you're at on your journey. Sticking your head in the sand is not going to fix the problem. And talk to us. We're not going to send you a bill. We're going to help you, and we have literally thousands of references that we've changed the lives. Our motto is changing the lives of those that change the world. And Guardian Promise is just a promise. It's an organization. It's a 501c3 nonprofit organization of ministers focusing on ministerial financial health. And I have an external board of pastors from all around the country that help us maintain that focus. We're here to do something that I don't think has ever been done to this extent in ministerial circles before, and it's our honor and our privilege to do it. I feel like it's a gift from God. It is my calling, and as long as there's breath and life in me, then I'm going to be preaching this sermon, and it's just my honor to do so, and I really appreciate you letting me participate in your program today, sir.
Well, Jerry, Hezekiah was told by God that he would die and that he needed to get his house in order. And then God let him live for another 15 more years. And we want to see pastors get their house in order. And then, Lord willing, God give him another 20, 30 years of ministry. Jerry Whitley of Guardian Financial Group has been helping us know how to practically help pastors. You can find out more about Jerry and Guardian by going to guardianfinancialgp.com. Now, when you come back, we're going to move from the practical to the personal and talk specifically about how to care for the emotional, relational, spiritual needs of a pastor and their family. Join back with us as we are caring for the clergy today on Stand in the Gap.
Hi, this is Bill Koenig of World Watch Daily from Washington, D.C. I commend Sam Rohr for airing the Stand in the Gap radio program on the American Pastors Network. Sam and his team of Dave, Gary, and Isaac offers a wide variety of guests that discuss the important and relevant issues that keep Christians informed and engaged. As a White House correspondent for the past 17 years, I have appreciated the opportunity to share what I'm observing in our country and the platform to discuss the biblically significant times that we are living in regarding Israel, the Middle East, and other key places around the world.
With a newspaper in one hand and the Word of God in the other, and with analysis from our team of preachers, combined with expert guests like Bill Koenig, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, George Barna,
Constitutional Attorney David New,
IQ Avrasuli, and many more, with God's guidance and your financial and prayer support, the Stand in the Gap Today team is quickly becoming the most trusted source of news. Pray for us. Stand with us. There's a silent but deadly cult spreading like a cancer among us. It's already martyred millions around the world and forced others into sexual slavery. That deadly cult is Islam. Pretending to be something it is not, Islam masquerades as peace but means submission. Yet most Americans are oblivious to this danger within. You can now learn the truth. You can get an attractive copy of What Every Christian Must Know About Islam this week for a gift of any amount from Stand in the Gap Radio. With key facts from previous radio programs and guests on Stand in the Gap today, including former Muslims, now Christians, former FBI agents, and preachers, this quick-read booklet tells you what you need to know, simply and clearly. What Every Christian Must Know About Islam, an original publication of the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap Radio. Yours now for a gift of any amount. Just go to standinthegapradio.com to order or write us at Stand in the Gap Radio, Box 83, West Main Street, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520.
With a woman to look at culture from a Christian worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Asked the New York Times recently, well, the key is to matter. In the article, mattering was defined as adding value to a community and being valued in return. Now, on one hand, this is kind of an example of missing the point of the problem. Telling someone to choose to matter when they don't think they do is kind of like telling someone to make meaning out of an ultimately meaningless universe with their ultimately meaningless lives. At the same time, the author's not wrong to imply that mattering to other people is far more important than the kind of internalized self-affirmation that typically passes for therapy these days. Our world leads us to be inwardly focused in so many ways, untethered from anything outside of our own feelings and will. But we were made to find meaning outside of ourselves, which is why deep connection and relationships matter so much and help us to know that we matter. That's the way God designed us. We can only truly know ourselves in reference to our most important relationships, especially with Him. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
Well, welcome back. Our focus today is caring for the clergy. We've already looked at how to help a pastor get his house in order, and specifically financially. But the second half, I want to look at how you can encourage your pastor to have his home in order. With all the stresses of ministry on a pastor, nothing is more adversely affected than a pastor's family. It seems that more pastors' spouses and kids get put on the altar when trying to serve God. And most time, churches don't even realize the toll that ministry is taking on their shepherd's home life. And most times, a pastor and his family suffer in silence. Gary and Cindy Blunier have dedicated themselves to care for the personal side of those in ministry. For 29 years, they've served with Family Life Ministries, and they serve in the role as staff chaplains. Their job is to pastor and care for those who are devoting themselves to serve Christ and serve families across the country and keep them healthy and keep their families healthy. Gary and Cindy, welcome to Stand in the Gap.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
Well, this is kind of fun. I got to have self-disclosure here. Gary and Cindy and I, we've known each other for more than 30 years because when our son came into this world, God found fit to place him in their hands as the initial foster parents. And for all these 30 years, we have kept this friendship. And this is a real treat for me to have them on today, and what a blessing. Gary, I want you to inform and enlighten our audience today. Many love their pastor, and they may not be even fully aware of the demands and pressures on those in ministry. What kinds of pressures do full-time ministers and ministry people face?
Well, I think we could talk a long time on this, but I think some of the primary ways that pastors and full-time Christian workers struggle is they feel like they're in the target. I mean, people are watching them. They might even have judgment call on what they're buying, how they're living. And so that's just on the personal side. But there's another factor that I think is even greater, and that's that most of our ministry leaders don't have a safe place to decompress. Cindy and I just returned about, 2-3 weeks ago from a pastor's retreat. It was Rest and Retreat down at Windshape, and that's what we found, that these pastors really have no place to to a safe place to talk through things that they're going through. They can't go to their elders, especially if they're struggling maybe in their own relationships with their kids or what it might be. They're afraid of judgment, so they don't usually have a safe place to go. So I would say, Cindy, would you have any others?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing, that they do have somebody that they can talk to, a place that they can go. I think those are all really important, because when they get isolated, that's when it's dangerous, I think, for the pastor himself and for his family.
Well, I always say that with a pastor, his family life, his work life, his church life, and his community life are all forced together. There is no compartmentalization. Unlike people in our church, but they have four different places they can go for support and help. And if one goes bad, they at least have three others to go to. But if one goes bad in a pastor's life, everybody gets affected. Cindy, I'm most interested in this. I guess you get to talk to a lot of spouses, and you get to hear a lot of their concerns and heartache. Many of these wives, when they got married, they kind of knew what they were facing. But what do you hear regarding the pressures that spouses face while they're supporting their husband in ministry?
I think that's a really good question, Jamie. One of the things that I find is it's very hard to compete with God, because, you know, we all know that God comes first. And when you love God the most, and if you feel like your ministry is important, it's like, where does your family fit in there? Because it's easy to be trumped by God. But it's like, what is God really asking you to do? And who is he really asking you to love? I remember recently reading an article about A.W. Tozer, the famous theologian. And, you know, he had such a deep passion for God, and he's very honored for that. And although there was no scandal in his life and he was never accused of any immorality to discredit his ministry or anything like that, what was disconcerting was his mediocre attempts at loving his wife and shepherding his children. I found that in his life, prayer and preaching and writing, travel, and mentoring young men took up most of his hours and left very little time to develop the marital intimacy that his wife craved. So after he passed away, some of her friends just said, you know, what's it? She remarried, by the way, to a man named Leonard Odom. And her friends were like, what's it like being married to Leonard? I mean, after being married to the famous A.W. Tozer. And she said, I've never been happier in my life. Aiden loved Jesus Christ, but Leonard Odom loves me. And I just think how pitifully and painfully lacking was his example if he loved Jesus so well, but failed to love the wife for which Christ died. So I think my takeaway from that was just to live in such a way that your family has no doubt that you love Jesus and love them well.
Well, Gary, a question for you. You've been at this now 29 years. You've seen changes in ministry. You've seen changes on ministry families and their lives, and obviously being a part of family life ministry, you must talk a lot about this. What kind of changes have you seen in ministry family lives over the years?
Well, I think one of the things that I'm noticing, especially even right now in our culture, is it's becoming very divisive, even in the church, because we have different, let's just take COVID. We just went through COVID. And during the middle of COVID, you had some people in their church, most likely, that said, we should wear masks. We need to wear masks, and we need to take the vaccine. And then you had other people that said, no, no, no. And so we're talking about people in their same church that couldn't agree. And so the pastor's trying to juggle those two opinions. And then you put on top of that, everything has gone down politically right now, and their pastors are kind of stuck in the middle. And they're in a glass house because everybody's watching them. And these polarizing political choices that are being made out right in the midst of the church, when do we open a church after COVID? Those kind of questions. It seems to me that the problems are that we can't, you know, it doesn't seem like the church, the people in the church, the people that we love the most, aren't getting along very well. They're struggling to get along within the church. We're seeing divisiveness within the church.
And this is so important for us to talk about this today, because as our audience is listening, they're more likely in the church. They're sitting in the pew Sunday after Sunday. Their pastor comes. He ministers. They go home. Their pastor goes home. And they are somewhat, I don't want to say isolated, but maybe ignorant of some of these pressures. Everybody has their own pressures, but this really weighs down, does it not, Cindy, on the pastor's family because of just what Gary said. They're in a fishbowl. Everybody's watching them, aren't they?
They really are, and I feel like their children are on display. And the children's choices are often considered to be reflective of the pastor himself, whether or not he made those choices. I mean, Adam and Eve had the perfect parent and the perfect environment and everything they needed, and they still made choices that were wrong. So I think a lot of pressure is put on our pastors and his family.
You encourage... and we'll talk about this probably before we end today, but certainly, like you just came from a retreat for a pastor, it's so crucial for pastors to get away and to reflect and work on these things. But that doesn't take the pressure away. It does give them some relief along the way. Friends, the struggle and heartache and pressures are real for those in ministry. And that's why we're doing this program today, both on the financial end, but at home, the pressures of ministry, the pressures of raising their family, being in center stage. And sadly, because pastors are spiritual leaders, we raise them up and think they should be able to handle these things without fail, without making a mistake, and it's just a heartache for them. They feel that they can't be vulnerable. They have to stand in ministry, and they don't even get times to grieve. And so when we come back in our final segment with Gary and Cindy, we want to suggest how to support, how to encourage, how to care for your pastor. But this is Pastor Appreciation Month. And I want to encourage you even now that you write your pastor, you call them, you reach out to them, you find ways to bless them. They're not perfect. They probably have even failed you. But encouraging your pastor is the key. And when we get back, we're going to talk to Gary and Cindy and put some other practical things as we find ways to care for our clergy.
Expressing gratefulness is not only essential for God's blessing, it's God's antidote to pride. So can I invite you to be grateful with us? In just 10 years, God's grown APN from a mere vision to now reaching millions every day with God's Word and a biblical worldview. We're so grateful. We're also thankful for you who've partnered in prayer or finances along the way. Now, can I ask you to be grateful to God? Bless us and others by writing a note sharing how God's used Stand in the Gap radio and TV in your life. Share your thankfulness online or simply send a letter like Mary did from Ohio. She said, "Your combining of biblical truth with the news of the days done more to keep me and my family informed and prepared than any source of news I've ever found. Thank you, thank you." So just like Mary, will you share your thanks with us? Gratefulness is contagious, brings God's blessing, and encourages others. Thank God with us. Send a letter or go to standinthegapmedia.org. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, God told the fathers, "Diligently teach your children the ways of God." BJU Press K-12 textbooks are designed to help parents do just that.
Whether you teach your children at home, online, or in Christian school, make sure they're getting an integrated biblical worldview instruction. In our nation's early days, Pennsylvania's William Penn understood God's requirement for freedom and national blessing, and he emphasized the necessity of parents and government leaders providing for a virtuous or godly education of the youth. Sadly, our children in government schools today are being taught historical falsehoods, immorality, and evolution. Like a roaring lion, the devil's stealing our children's hearts and minds through deceit and lies. But a rigorous, godly education can still raise up Daniels and Josephs, Esthers and Ruths. A friend of freedom and your partner in godly K-12 education, BJU Press is here for you. Don't take chances with your children. Visit BJUPress.com for your best option. When God warns, we'd better listen. In Isaiah chapter 5, God's prophet pronounced six specific warnings of imminent judgment against identified national sins. These woes were sobering, the sin specific, God's judgment certain. The message was to Israel, the applications for America. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr with another Stand in the Gap Minute. The first woe identified the sin of materialism. After blessing the nation with security, wealth, houses, and productive land, they turned their back on God. The result? God withheld his blessings, removed his protection, allowed rebellion within and threats of attack from without. Sound like America? The second woe in Isaiah 5:11 identified the sin of hedonism. Consumed with an intoxicating addiction to alcohol, drugs, entertainment, and partying, the nation willfully rejected God and the consequences of evil choices. Again, sound like America? While God's full of mercy, his justice will prevail. Join with us to communicate God's truth at standinthegapmedia.org.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
Just to mention, last week or so, I was out at Answers in Genesis at the Ark, saw Ken Ham, and we're so thankful for their partnership with the American Pastors Network, and encourage you to get out there. What an amazing place. And every month, you'll hear the Answers in Genesis staff as they do our apologetics days here, and so what a blessing to have them as part of the APN team. Also, don't forget, Tuesday, November 14th is coming upon us, our 10th anniversary celebration with Michelle Bachman, George Barna, and all of our hosts will be there, Gary, Dave, Isaac, Sam, myself, and we just would love for you to be as part. Go to our website and sign up so that we know you're coming. We can plan ahead as well as to keep you informed of any updates. Well, time has flown by again, and we're at the end of another Stand in the Gap. Our focus today has been on practically and personally preparing to show care for our pastors and their families. Gary and Cindy Blunier, chaplains with Family Life Ministries, are helping us understand the pressures on a pastor and his family. And Gary, one of the things we want to make known to our people today are just ways that they can help those who serve the Lord. What can people do for their pastor? And then I'm going to have Cindy jump in here about wives and kids. But why don't you focus on the pastor? What kinds of things should the people in the pew be doing to encourage and help and support and care for their pastor?
Well, I think there are several things. You know, we may have pastors listening, and I think we need to look at it from that perspective too. But if you have lay people, maybe elders that are listening, people are trying to figure out how to care for a pastor, I think the first thing it would be to provide a safe place for them to decompress. We find that that's extremely helpful from our perspective with our staff. And really what safe means is that they can tell you what's going on in their life and they're not going to be judged by that, and that we're going to listen carefully, and we're going to keep that confidentiality of everything. If he fears, that pastor fears that something he shares with you is going to be put on social media or shared or gossiped on, it's not a safe place. And so I would say, that would be the first thing. And then when there are struggles, when a pastor does share maybe an area of struggle, maybe he's struggling with a choice that his child made or something like that, be there with them throughout the struggle. don't say, well, I'm going to pray for you and walk away. I think you need to be there and check in with them. Say, how's it going? Cindy and I used to joke, our staff would come in, and one of the first things they would say is, well, we're going to have to leave staff. And they would share something, maybe a choice that their child made. And we'd say, no, you don't have to leave staff for that. That choice is made by your child. And I think pastors need that same permission. You know, a child may get pregnant out of wedlock or something. We don't know. The bottom line is those things do happen. We're not perfect. None of us are perfect. And so I want to encourage these people that are listening today. I want to encourage your listeners to come alongside those pastors and really care for them in a deep and real way. A couple other things that I would throw in. I know our church really encourages our pastors to take a sabbatical. And that's something that you have to put into your plan. And so like every 5 years, I think it is, they get a 30 days off sabbatical where they can just kind of rest on their own and get away from the hustle bustle. And that takes a lot of intentionality. And so that's one thing I think is really important in the life of a pastor. I think that 1 month every 5 years will cause their stay at the church to go longer. And then another thing, the last thing I would recommend is just for them to look for a pastor's retreat. The one we went to with, it's called Windshape Marriage. And pastor, they do like 4 a year. So pastors can sign up for a full week of rest and relaxation. And I'm going to say we were there and they had a full 5 days of R&R and it was so cool. And so I think if I was in my church, I want to encourage our pastors, senior pastors, to go to that because it just gives them a break in the action and a safe place for them to decompress and really spend some quality time, intimate time with their spouse because they're able to spend time with them.
Cindy, I'm going to get to you in just a second about the wives and kids. But Gary, one of the things as you were speaking, it may not be that the pastor even feels comfortable talking to somebody at the church, but you still can go to the pastor and say, Pastor, do you have someone to talk to? Can we get you with somebody? And encouraging them to have someone to talk to. Isn't that even a more wonderful way to care for your pastor by just acknowledging they need that kind of outlet?
I would agree wholeheartedly. You know, every church is different. It may be a smaller church, and he may not have the relationship with anybody in the church where he can sit down and really be real. But I do think they need to be encouraged to do that. Just like you said, they need to be encouraged. And I don't, you know, sometimes I see pastors from other churches get together. I'm not going to try to figure. I think I would pray about it because the Lord will provide a place. But it's something that you have to be intentional about. You can't just say, well, it's not working out. That means you're probably not being intentional.
Cindy, what about wives of shepherds and also kids? How can we come around them and bless them and support them in any specific ways?
Yeah, I feel like what Gary said definitely benefits the wives and the children as well. But Jamie, you mentioned earlier that the pastorate is often hard to compartmentalize things because you don't go home from the job and you take things with you. And I think even though their job often is 24/7, there are ways that as a congregation, we can help by making sure that their days off are days off, that we don't interrupt if not absolutely necessary, putting some boundaries on their work hours so that they're not on call all the time, that they have some family time, maybe even just encouraging date nights with their wives and providing someone from the church to babysit and encouraging people to give them gift cards. But just things that you can do to help them keep some of those rhythms of life that people outside of the ministry often enjoy. But in ministry, it kind of all gets rolled into one, and you feel like you're always on call. So I think as a congregation, we can help the pastors and their families by respecting boundaries.
Well, pretty interesting is this past weekend, I was out in Indianapolis where that little baby who you got to hold before my wife and I got to hold, Alex, is now 32 years old. He has a child of his own. And as so I was interacting with him this weekend a little bit, I was reminded that the other thing that was really important for us as a family was that he saw the blessing of being in ministry. We got less than a minute left. That's an important thing, isn't it, Cindy, that the kids of ministers see the ministry as a blessing?
That's true, because I think if they always see it as a heartache and they always feel like you're struggling financially and you never have time for them, they're not going to want to do that to their kids. So I think the ministry being positive and being a blessing has a more likelihood of encouraging kids to go into ministry.
Gary, Cindy, what a joy to have you. Ladies and gentlemen, it is early enough for you to put some ideas together and to show support and love to your pastor. Don't let another day go by. Hey, listen, don't just make it 1 month a year. Do it all the time. We're here to encourage you and to encourage pastors to live and lead with courage. Until tomorrow, this is Jamie Mitchell. Have a great rest of the day. Thanks for listening to Stand in the Gap today.
If you liked today's program, tell a friend. You'll also want to hear Stand in the Gap Weekend and watch the nationally syndicated Stand in the Gap TV program. We present the news of the day truthfully, carefully, and consistently from a biblical worldview and constitutional perspective. If you're hungry for the truth, visit standinthegapmedia.org to find all our programs and the stations that carry them. While you're there, be sure to download our free app and support this ministry with your best financial gift. Then join us again right here Monday through Friday for another program of Stand in the Gap Today.